Imagine for a moment, you know, you're in a museum and you're looking at a painting, and it's a strange painting. Sort of take it in, and what's the next move you make? What's available to you to make sense of this painting? Well, inevitably, right next to the painting on the wall is some writing. There's some writing about that painting. Some of that information might or might not be useful, right? It'll tell you, you know, it's a sort of citation, right? The sort of property, a provenance of this thing, right? It'll tell you who made it, the year they made it, and who owns it, right? It's usually on loan from some rich person. And then somewhere on these walls, there's other kinds of writing, other kinds of explanations about what it is you're seeing when you are standing in front of this painting, right? It might tell you about the way this artist was going through a certain phase, who was influenced by this, who was interested in, the everyday means of production, or was interested in the construction of gender, or the nonsense you used to always see in museums was, so-and-so is interested in the whole question of identity. Cindy Sherman is interested in the question of identity. You can't ask for a more sort of inane proclamation than that. But what I want to point out is the literal choreography or architecture of sense-making in that moment. You come to the museum, you look at that painting, and the assumption held by both you and the institution is that you do not have the tools to make sense of that painting. You lack those tools. There are some people who know what this painting means or the relevance of this painting, and they put that information on the walls next to you or in a little brochure. Either way, picture the choreography. You look at the painting, and then you don't look at the painting. You turn away. So in order to make sense of this thing, you look at something else. And that something else, presumably, will provide the key that will explain, that will help you understand, make sense of, and finally experience this painting. That therefore tells us that we do not imagine that there is an event in and of itself between the viewer and the object that is of value or should be valued, right? It might have some value, but we don't privilege that. We do our best to mediate it, to deviate from it, to put something between the event, between the object and me, to disrupt the event or to detour the event through these words, right? Again, it's a quite literal, spatial, as well as invisible architecture of sense-making. You come to the painting, you're standing in front of it, and where does your gaze go? Does it linger over this painting? Does it sit there, take it in, follow the lines, get up really close to see the texture, stand back, move around it, perhaps get bored, perhaps move on, perhaps sit there entranced, perhaps just like a moment of it? We look away from the painting in order to make sense of the painting. And what is it we hope? What are these things we're looking at to make sense of it? So I'm putting my experience of viewing, of engaging, of sensing this painting, and I'm putting those aside, that whole experience, that event aside, and I'm looking to something else. So I'm looking to who made it, authorship, right? So somehow if I know who made it, that will help me understand it. So I look at it and I go, oh, that's a Baldessari. Oh, of course, that's a Cindy Sherman. That's a Matthew Ritchie. Oh, but of course, right? As if the author, the person explains the painting, or the ooh explains the painting. And of course, this is not to say that those things are irrelevant. It's just to say that those things don't determine the meaning, right, of that painting, don't determine that experience. I can have an experience of this painting here, standing in front of it, that is completely indifferent to who created it. Foucault suggested, you know, in an anonymous interview, so how I know it was Foucault, how we know it was Foucault, of course, is hilarious, but he suggested in an interview that for 1 year, all books published in France should be published without an author's name. His point being that when we know the author, we already come to it with certain assumptions, right? We say, oh, this book's by Sam Harris. I don't like that Sam Harris. Or this is Michel Houellebecq. Or this is Burroughs. I don't read Burroughs. Or Burroughs is a genius. Or we come to it already invested rather than reading the damn thing, right? Rather than engaging it and trying to make sense of, does this do it for me? Does this engage me? Does this teach me something? Does this turn me on? Does this titillate me? Does this excite me? Does this teach me? Does this lead me astray? Does this confirm me? Does this disconfirm me? What does it do? Instead, we want to know what it is, right? We turn to sort of a geometry of sense making, right? Fixing it in place, in its category. This person made it. And then we say, this person made it at this time as part of this movement. And it's a series of buckets. It's literally a geometry of nesting elements, right, that cascade up and down, right? There's a category. This is art. I'm in a museum. This is a abstract expressionism. This is, de Kooning. This is, and you keep going down, and each thing becomes an example of the thing above it. So again, you end up in this architecture of a hierarchy, of a three-dimensional structure of supersessive categories. Each thing is bigger than the other. So you have the painting, but the artist is bigger than the painting, right? All the painting is included within that artist. But then that artist is included within an historical period or a movement. And that includes all of that person. And then that historical movement is incorporated in greater historical moments. And again, each thing keeps going up in a bigger category, right? And this is how a lot of logic works, right? You have the general axiom, and then you draw out your propositions and your sub-propositions based on that general axiom. I want to call that mode of making sense, that architecture, that's a technology. That is a way of constructing, a whole mechanistic way of constructing sense, to make something, to produce sense. We don't see it as technology, we just see it as what we do. That's how you make sense of it. I don't know who made it. I gotta know when it was made. I gotta know, you know, the materials. I gotta know the movement. I gotta know, you know, maybe there are other things I need to know. Right? So we have authorship, history. Maybe I need to know its sort of ideology. Maybe I'll do a Freudian reading or a Marxist reading or a feminist reading or a fourth wave feminist reading or a Deleuzian reading or a Derridian reading, right? Those cases as well, and what we might call sort of ideology critique, they follow the same logic, right? They are part of the same technology of sense making, in which, in order to understand this book, this painting, this thing, I have to look elsewhere. So in order to understand my conditions, I have to read Marx. In order to understand James Joyce, I have to read whoever the heck, you know, I got to read Derrida. In order to understand, Levi-Strauss, I got to read Derrida's Of Grammatology. Again, it's the detour, it's the writing on the wall, but it's also this geometric, this 3D hierarchy of sense making, right? It's a structure with certain mechanisms to produce a certain kind of reading. And I call it geometric because it's all about fixing something in its place, putting something in a bucket. Time, or the event, the actual duration of engaging a painting, and all the ways that painting and I and will change together over time. Right? The event is a duration that can't be reduced to space. That's Bergson's great contribution. It's a great moment. When you make sense of this moment, the world really opens up. Duration cannot be reduced to plots on a map, to space, to the space covered. Which is to say, when I read a book or I'm standing in front of a painting, I'm not just taking that thing and dropping it in the bucket and saying, oh, that's abstract expressionism. I'm looking at it and there's something happening in time, of time, that is time, between the painting and me that transpires. And what I want to do is develop a technology of sense-making that begins with the event of engaging something, not with the categories, not with the three-dimensional buckets that are said to precede this particular thing that's right in front of me. So again, the sort of forms or mechanisms within this technology include authorship, category or movement, history, ideology, cultural forces, right? All these things that are outside and precede the particularity of this thing here, this painting, this book, right? All these things are outside of the critical scope. They are considered just what there are. They themselves are not questioned, right? The question that the institution, this technology, puts to us is, how does this fit in? But again, I want to proffer or begin to proffer a different technology that begins with a different question, saying, how does this go? And it, when you ask this question, you inaugurate, you launch, you set in motion a fundamentally different technology, a different architecture, a different set of relationships between you, the world, other people, concepts, knowledge, history. And I'll get to those concepts. I want to first begin making clear how I'm calling this sense-making a technology, and how this technology of sense-making, this hierarchical, geometric, categorical way of making sense, functions. Another sort of insidious, mechanism within this technology is identification. That is, we look for ourselves in the thing we're watching. You know, a classic example would be the TV show Friends, and people say, oh, you're a Monica, you're a Rachel. You know, people do that now with the, Astoundingly Brilliant, as opposed to Astoundingly Brilliant, Broad City. It's a better example than Friends, which is egregious bourgeois idiocy. But people say, are you an Abby or are you an Alana? But what I love about that show, and maybe it's because I'm a guy, but I can say this also about Cassavetes film, so I don't think it's gendered like that, is that they are themselves. They are so different, right? They become something that I don't have to identify with. The thing about identification is that it assumes that what I am is not up for grabs, that I'm a fixed thing, just as, say, the author is, just as we can say, inclined to say, that Picasso is a fixed thing, and that's an example of a Picasso painting. When I see myself and my world in the art, I am confirming Just like I'm confirming when I see a Picasso that that's a Picasso, I'm confirming that that's a me. Which means that me, that everything I am, is not up for grabs. It is already done. It is a fixed thing. It is geometric. Rather than myself being something that is itself in motion, that is becoming, that is emerging, that what happens in the dominant technology of sense is the self and the ego and all of its institutions, including authorship and ideology, are confirmed, are made stronger. What I want to suggest and what I want to begin to proffer is a technology that would begin with the fundamental uncertainty, instability, nomadic tendencies of everything, including the subject, including me, including the critic, including you, and that to engage with something, to engage with art, to engage with another human being, to engage with anything, and I'll get to that in a moment. Rather than putting my known self in the way and judging everything through this known quantity, this predetermined quantity, I look at things and I seek to be led astray. I seek to become something else, to have the limits of what and how I am pushed, nudged in different directions, in unpredictable directions. Doesn't mean I always have to follow it that way, but at least I'm prodded that way. I am open up to something new. Otherwise, in this old technology of sense-making, what I'll call exemplary reading, reading everything as an example of something else, the possibility of the new is exiled. How can you have something new if you're constantly confirming what something is, fitting it into a category? Because the categories themselves then are not up for grabs. But what I want to do is to create a technology, a way of making sense in which, yes, there are categories, but the categories themselves are in motion and don't necessarily determine the particular, but more often, or just as often, or however it plays out, the particular forms a network, forms a structure with the category, creates the category. I taught a seminar many years ago to MFAs at the San Francisco Art Institute. And the assignment was students had to create their own movements, their own categories. And they had to look at all the art, and what even counts of art, as art was up for grabs. They had to look at all images, sounds, whatever they wanted to look at, and arrange them and make a school and then write the manifesto for that school. What is it that links these things together? If you stand back for a minute and just see the great expanse of stuff before us, books and images and art and things and people and bodies, think about all the ways they can be arranged. Not just by ideology, category, history, not just by identification, authorship, not just in the disciplines as the university would have us, not just in the disciplines that our entire pedagogic system is built on. That's in English, that's philosophy, that's history. But think about sprawling every which way, not just vertically as exemplary reading would have us do, not just up and down, not just saying this fits into this bucket, it nests within it, right? Which is a vertical architecture. But looking at how things can forge relationships horizontally, right, through affect, right, so that let's say you look at Jackson Pollock and then you read Burroughs and then you see Chuck Jones, you know, great cartoons and his later Bugs Bunny and all that. And you say, okay, these make sense together. They form a kind of network, right, of a certain kind of going together, a certain drip, a certain speed. None of this is to say or suggest at all that there is a radical particularity of a thing outside of culture and ideology and self and history. It's just to say that these things are need neither be hierarchical nor linear. That a thing forges all kinds of networks with other things that are historical, conceptual, categorical, ideological, but that those histories and ideologies and categories don't come first and don't determine. They are up for grabs too. And what makes them up for grabs is that everything is in motion in the event of experiencing the world, of standing before that painting, of reading that book, of being a parent. I don't have to look up how to be a parent, right? I can begin with my parent experience, and that can change the concept of what it means to be a parent. I can look at a painting and make a sense of it that no historian, no so-called expert ever would. Right? The old technology, the hierarchical technology, the categorical technology is premised on a certain institutional hegemony, a certain institutional structure that needs these experts to explain things to us. You know, and as Roland Barthes, you know, talks about in Death of the Author, this is a very old structure. This is a religious structure, a Christian structure, right? Where the priest has to intercede, right, between the truth, the God, and the flock who wouldn't understand otherwise. They wouldn't understand the words of God without the brilliance of the priest. Of course, sometimes the priest does have a good insight. A good priest has a good insight. A good rabbi has a good insight into a reading of Moses, right? It should surprise you, right? You shouldn't, you know, a good sermon would be, oh, wow, I never thought about Moses that way. He was a schnook, right? It took a Stanley Rosen, a philosopher, to show me what a schnook Moses was. You know, it's too bad a rabbi never taught me that. So it's not that there's anything wrong with the particular things an expert says. I just want to suggest that the culture of an expert is part of the technology of a hierarchical, non-creative sense-making that would always run between you, all of us, and the world we experience. In the end, what I want to begin proffering, and I do it in my book, I've done it before, and I want to flesh out in these podcasts and blogs, is a new technology of making sense of the world that is radically democratic, right? That is that in which the sense making takes place at the intersection of you and thing, and the intersection of you and thing, which entails an entire complex network of other forces and other things. But I want to empower everyone anywhere to be in front of anything and make creative new sense of it. That they won't have to look elsewhere just to know what's already been known, but can experience something then and there, and perhaps changing over time, that changes them and the world itself.